everybody. Good morning and welcome to the Halloween YYJ 2024 Market.
Yay!
Yay! We're so excited to be here with you today. We are Ghoul Society Podcast. This is my little sister, Sarah.
And that's my big sister, Jamie.
I don't think they can hear me.
Okay, let's share this mic. So, okay. Here's Sarah.
And that's my big sister, Jamie.
We're so excited to be here with you today for our very first live show ever. We want to give a big shout out to Kirsten, who found our podcast pretty recently and reached out to us.
Yes.
Inviting us to the early bat shopping hour to provide you, our amazing ghoulies, with some local, historical, spooky stories. We're extremely grateful to be with you on the traditional, unsurrendered territories of the Esquimalt and Songhees nations, and the land of the Lekwungen and Wasanich peoples, whose strong historical relations with the land continue to this day. The fight against colonial violence and racism is ongoing, and we at Ghoul Society are committed to this fight and working toward reconciliation within ourselves, our families, and our communities. By listening to this live show, you've officially been inducted into the Ghoul Society. We hope you have an awesome time haunting around the market today as you listen to our episode. So, hi Sarah.
Hi.
This might be a little bit awkward since we need to share this mic, but we will do it as best as we can.
Yeah. Oh, maybe we just have to talk like this.
That works.
No,
it doesn't.
No, it doesn't work. Okay. So, I'm going to talk about Hatley Castle today.
Ooh.
You could try this.
Ooh. Oh, did it work?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Okay. Yeah, you just have to be louder.
Okay.
Okay.
How is this?
It's perfect.
Great.
Okay.
So, Hatley Castle.
Hatley Castle. Built by architect Samuel McClure in 1908 in the style of Gothic Revival, Hatley Castle, located in Colwood, stands 82 feet tall and covers 17,200 square feet. Just the castle itself.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. The lands, known as Hatley Park, were purchased by James Dunsmuir in 1907 from gentleman farmer Roland Stewart. Stewart co-owned the property with Charles, who gave the property its name, Hatley, which was the name of his ancestral home. Hatley Park takes up 565 acres and includes oceanfront and views of the Olympic Mountains across the waters in the States.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So before colonial settlement, these lands were used by the Tsewepsum, Esquimalt, and Lekwungen Songhees nations for thousands of years.
Oh,
they would
okay.
have started to be forced off these lands into smaller reserve spaces in the early 1800s as settlers thought they weren't being used
right.
since there was no practice of private land establishments within indigenous communities.
Right.
Obviously, this wasn't true as they were being used, and it's important to recognize that all of the land within and around Victoria is unsurrendered territories, including the land that Dunsmuir purchased. So by the time he purchased the land in 1907, it was unfairly occupied by settlers for almost 100 years. So he wanted to purchase the property because he wanted to build a home for his family. He wanted the ability for his wife to entertain Victoria society while he could fish and hunt and play the role of a gentleman farmer.
Oh.
Did you know? A gentleman farmer is just a well-to-do man who runs a farm for pleasure.
Okay.
Yeah. He's not doing any actual farming himself.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's just saying that he is a farmer, but he's not. So this wasn't the...
rich people.
Yeah.
I can't hear it.
Really?
Yeah. It's not work.
Oh. Yeah, it okay. is. Yeah.
You have to. I'm just...
Oh.
Squish together or else I won't be able to pick it up.
Yeah, yeah. Can Sorry guys. Technical difficulties. Okay, he's a farmer but not really.
He's a farmer but not really, and also this wasn't the first castle in the Dunsmuir family.
Oh, okay.
Craig Derrick Castle, which we all know. yeah. in Rockland was built by James's father, Robert Dunsmuir, who purchased the land in 1887 and started building his castle.
Yes.
However, Robert actually died in 1889 without seeing the completion of the castle, and it ended up being completed by his sons, James and Alex,
yes.
and then became a home for their mother and unmarried sisters.
Also, the picture for our podcast... The picture for our podcast is
Craig
that castle.
Garrett castle, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty cool. So because James was traumatized from this, he was like, we got to make sure we build Hatley Castle as quickly as possible. So let's hire 100 builders, 25 detail carpenters, and 60 stonemasons, most of which were Chinese workers.
So he wouldn't die?
Yeah.
Before it was finished?
Yeah, that's right. Oh. Yeah. The total construction time of Hatley Park was only 18 months.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, 17,000 square feet built in 18 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's been suggested that James said to the architect, it doesn't matter what it costs, just build me what I want.
So he... Oh, was he like the richest man in the area?
Yeah, because at one point he was actually the premier of BC, and then he was the lieutenant governor.
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 Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah.
Cool.
Part of the Dunsmuir's shtick was that he would hire Chinese laborers, work them super hard, like about 60 hours a week.
Okay.
And then only pay them 15 cents an hour, which was considerably less than wages paid to European immigrants. They were literally known around Victoria society for this type of exploitation.
Classic.
Yeah.
Classic so, white people move.
I know. So a little bit of history for that. From 1885 to 1923, the Canadian government imposed a head tax on Chinese immigrants. First it was $50.
Right.
Then it was $100
yeah.
in 1900. And then $500 only 3 years later.
Wait. And like...
Yeah.
In 1903?
Dollars, yeah.
500, wait, what is that today? Did you look it up?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't look it up.
Okay, so probably like 10 grand?
Probably, yeah. And
oh,
so
wow,
this made it
okay.
so that it was financially unfeasible to bring entire families over from China. The men who had been saving hard to bring over their families had their hopes destroyed by the Chinese Exclusion Act, which banned immigration from China between 1923 and 1947.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We know very little about Chinese workers of this time because their names were never recorded. They were simply recorded as a number in the labor system.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about what the castle looks like when you arrive. First of all, it's friggin' huge. There's a covered carriage porch at the main entrance so people don't get wet when it's raining. Classic Victoria. And then visitors are greeted by large double oak doors with brass handles, stone carvings... with James Dunsmuir's initials, and the entire building was built with granite. Around the
doors, entire house?
Yeah. Well, castle. The entire castle was built with granite.
How did they do that?
I don't know.
What? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know how things are built, obviously.
Around the doors and windows, there was stone that was used from Saturna Island, too.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Okay.
There are medieval busts on either side of the door, which indicate the gender distinction on the first floor wings. East was ladies, and west was men's.
I didn't know that was a thing.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah. There was also an electric doorbell, which is crazy, because that was such a mark of wealth. Like, yeah, imagine in 1910, you have full electricity through your castle. On 565 acres of land.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
there
crazy.
There are 7 wood-burning fireplaces on the first floor, but they're all for show. The home was kept warm with a steam-based central heating system. So just fake fireplaces.
Oh, steam.
Anyway.
Do you know how steam-based works?
No.
Oh.
I imagine they just pump the steam through the house.
Pump the steam through the house?
Yeah, that's right.
No.
Oh, okay.
Through the radiators.
Yeah.
Yes. You know how it works.
Are you a builder?
It'd be so steep. Oh, imagine just steam
just
running through your house
all the time.
Ew. It would all be so soggy.
Yeah.
Ew, so, that'd be gross.
Anyway, it's a super bougie castle, which has 40 elegant rooms. And overall, the castle cost over $1 million in 1908 dollars. Would you like to guess how much money that is in today's money?
$50 million.
No. Too much. Too high.
Oh. Okay.
$34,271,847.83.
Oh, and the 83 cents is very important, you guys.
Right. There's also a stone wall that surrounds the entire castle and a greenhouse, which each of those cost $75,000 in 1908 dollars.
The stone blocks?
The stone wall.
The wall. How tall is this wall?
I don't know.
Okay, well...
I'm sorry, I haven't been there.
Yet.
It's part of our research is to go there. Yeah. The craziest part of all of that, after the family all died, it was sold to the Dominion government in 1940 for only $75,000.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh. By 1968, that's awful. It was functioning as the Royal Roads Military College. And finally,
yes.
By 1995, the BC government opened Royal Roads University.
Oh, that's
the castle?
So before
we get into the spooks, I want to talk a little bit more about the family.
Okay.
If that's okay.
Okay.
So Laura and James Dunsmuir had 12 children, 3 males, 9 females, 10 of which survived childhood. Before they moved to Hatley Castle, they had taken up residency at a couple different spaces. One at a home called Burlieth, which was at 743 Craigflower Road, which actually burned to the ground on Halloween, 1931.
Oh my gosh. Wait, when they were living there?
No.
Oh.
They moved out.
And oh, then duh. It down. That was like 30 years later. Jeez.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Everybody okay? Yeah.
I think they're good.
Okay.
What?
I'm worried about your volume level. But maybe
on
you're
which
okay.
One?
On this.
Yeah, me too.
Oh. Yeah.
See, that's why I have to do it like this.
Kirsten, whatever you did, I think it's good.
Oh.
Just go up?
Yeah, I think so. Keep talking, Sarah.
Okay.
Keep to just saying just say
testing,
like
testing.
Yeah.
Testing. 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 I didn't do anything. Now we got to share. Testing. Testing. What happened?
Testing. I don't know what happened. Is it muted?
Just live things. Yeah, I know. Not really.
A little tiny bit.
Okay, I don't know how to make it work. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
We have to go offline.
No worries. Yeah, all good.
Going offline.
Well, but you can decide if you still want to try to speak to that or not.
I think she's turning it off.
No, she's going to be able to go
offline. Oh.
We can just sit like this.
My coffee, first of all. Hold on.
Okay. Sorry for the delay, everyone. Just tell me if you have something to say. Just tell me.
I always have something to say. That's the problem.
Okay. So we're back to where were we here?
The Halloween fire.
So, oh yeah, the house at Burlieth.
Okay.
Yes, so that house burned to the ground on Halloween 1931. But it was long after they moved out. This house was used by high Victorian society for events and parties and regattas and socials. And Laura, she was super interested in climbing the societal ladder. That's why she married James Dunsmuir in the first place.
What's a regatta?
I don't know what a regatta is.
I'm young. I need to know these things.
Maybe you can look it up for us, cause, and then we can explain what a regatta is. I feel like it's kind of like a pâté, but like a fancy pâté, you know?
But isn't that what a ball is?
Maybe a regatta is a small ball. So in 1906, when Dunsmuir was appointed Lieutenant Government of BC, him and his family had to take up residency at Carey Castle, which that sounds fancy, right? Except it was just some 19th century wooden service buildings located on the southeast side of the Government House estate. The Dunsmuirs were the settler elite of the time. But before being appointed Lieutenant Governor, he was actually the Premier of BC. He resigned due to conflicts of interest connected to railway politics. Anyway, he was like, I'm out of these politics. I'm a millionaire. I don't need to do this. I'm a mining and a railway tycoon, and I'm just going to retire with my money. Bye! And then he just ran away and built Hatley Castle.
Okay, I found out what a regatta is. It's just like a group of people sailing together.
So they're sailing in the castle.
No, so because they're on the water, right?
No.
I thought that Hatley Castle was on the water.
Okay, but they were at Burleigh Castle first when they were having the regattas.
Okay, well, a regatta is like a party where you get together with your friends in your boats, and then you just like travel around on your boats and party.
Okay, actually, I just remembered a fact when I was doing the research for this episode is that they did have yachts, and one of the yachts burned down as well.
What, did it burn down on Halloween?
No, unfortunately not. Sorry. So once they all moved to the castle, only 5 of the children actually lived there because 4 of them at this point were already married by the time the house was completed. And one of them was actually disowned by James.
Dun, dun, dun. What did they do?
I don't remember.
What? Why isn't that in there? That is some saucy thing.
Saucy gossip. So finally, the part we've all been waiting for. Let's get into the family tragedies. None of these deaths are super intense, but this is your trigger warning for death. The main players in this part are James's brother, whose name is Alex, James and Laura's son, James, who they also called Boy. So we're going to call him Boy. Hey, Boy, come on over here, Boy.
Hey, Boy.
Followed by James, wait, then Laura, then Eleanor, their daughter, and finally Kathleen, their other daughter. There's probably more deaths, but these are the notable ones that will come back.
So they all died.
Yeah, well, yeah. This is like 100 years ago, of course.
But they all died in close succession?
No.
Oh.
I just wanted to list them all off for you. So it seemed spookier.
Okay.
After Robert Dunsmuir passed, Alex, James's brother, so Robert's the dad, right? Alex realized he was finally free from his father's demands and decided to officially move to New York. He had been going back and forth there because his lover was there, his soon-to-be wife.
Oh.
And so he wanted to marry the love of his life, of course, as we all do. However, on his honeymoon, he was on the train trip with his new wifey, and he drank well beyond his capacity and ended up in an alcohol-induced coma and died not long after.
He drank that much?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, and especially back then, I feel like that's pretty crazy because they used to drink a lot.
Yeah, and wouldn't they like water stuff down, maybe? Or was it stronger?
Well, because he was rich, probably stronger.
True, that's a good point.
There probably weren't like regulations like we have now for percentages and stuff.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, so he died. Then James and Laura have their kids. When boy was 21, he felt his calling to... Why are you laughing?
Who? Just boy. Like, where does that come from?
I have no idea. They just decided, like...
Yeah, let's name him boy.
Is that his actual birth name?
No, his name is James.
I forgot already.
So when boy was 21, he felt his calling to join the forces fighting in World War I. On May 7th, 1915, boy was aboard the Lusitania when a German U-boat slammed two torpedoes into the ship, causing it and 1,193 men to sink into the cold waters of the Atlantic.
He was on that ship?
Yeah.
That's actually crazy.
I know.
I kind of...
You're speechless.
I am. Wait, what year was that again?
1915.
Imagine if he was on the Titanic.
Okay, like, is it overkill to do a story on the Titanic?
No, because you're a Titanic boy. Jamie, little known fact, Jamie is obsessed with the Titanic.
I mean, who wouldn't be obsessed with the Titanic?
I mean, you're in your mid-20s.
I'm in my late 20s.
That's what I meant, but I didn't want to hurt your feelings.
I'm happy to be in my late 20s. Anyways, back to the story. James never emotionally recovered from boy's death, and Laura continued to believe that boy would eventually come home. So she was a little bit in Delulu land, and I don't blame her. James spent more and more time at the Cowichan Lake Retreat, and in June 1920, he was there with his close friends, who were doctors, and that night he passed away in his sleep. Could this have been maybe assisted death?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that was a deeper question than it is, but yeah, you're right. Yeah, duh.
Wait, who assisted him?
His doctor friends.
Oh, then yeah, he probably was like, hey, can you help me die?
Yeah, because he was so sad about his son, boy, dying.
Yeah, exactly.
I know.
But what about his wife?
Well, Laura was left with the family fortune, and a bunch of her daughters moved to Paris for the roaring 20s.
Mm.
Eventually, one of their daughters, Eleanor, a respectable composer and pianist. Did I just say pianist?
Wait, did you...
Sorry, pianist. came back to Hatley Castle to live with Laura. Laura recognized her daughters wouldn't be able to afford the upkeep of the castle because obviously it's like ridiculously expensive. And they didn't have any money coming in, they just had a fortune. Like, because James was like, I don't want to be part of the mining business anymore, I'm done with this. And so they didn't actually have any, like, income. They were just living lavishly rich.
Oh, no. That's... But if she was, like, a really good pianist, then why... Like, she could have made money.
No, she's a woman in the 1920s.
But you said she was a composer.
Yeah, but she wasn't, like, a famous composer because she's a woman in the 1920s.
Yeah, but there were some women who came out on top.
Now they came out on top.
Okay. You got me there.
Yeah, I got you. So anyway, Laura was like, my daughters are not going to be able to afford this. I'm going to put in my will that once I die, I'm just going to pay off my staff. I'm going to pay out my family, and the castle's going up for sale. That's it. That's the end of the castle.
So then where are they going to live?
Well, after Laura died, 6 months later, Eleanor died at Hatley Castle as well.
So the castle is cursed.
Yeah.
Anyone who lives there will die.
Maybe. But there's students there now, so watch what you're saying.
Do they live there, though?
No. It's true. Okay. Finally, the last death here. Kathleen's death. It's a bit more eerie. She had traveled to London in 1941 to visit her son, who was living there, and to volunteer for the war effort, the Second War. obviously. Listen, I'm not a historian, but I do know when World War II is starting to take place, okay? So.
So bad.
She was celebrating her son's wedding at the Café de Paris, which was underground and deemed to be safe. However, during a bombing raid, a bomb went down a ventilation chute, exploding in the dining room, killing Kathleen and others in an instant. But the eeriest twist of it, the restaurant was modeled after the Palm Room from the Lusitania, where her uncle had died.
Oh, I wish that the people who will be listening to this at a later date could see my face, because what the actual F.
I know.
What?
I know.
How did it? I can't believe a bomb just like went down a vent shaft and blew up the room that looked like it was from the, what was the ship called?
Lusitania.
Yeah. Like, talk about more than a coincidence.
Yeah, talk about some weird spiritual energy happening there. I know. Anyways, now we finally get to talk about the hauntings at Hatley Castle. There are many spirits that could be haunting the grounds at Hatley, from Chinese men who labored endlessly to the various family members that spent most of their time there. People have recorded many spooky stories and experiences in the castle. There have been accounts of music playing in the study, where James would play somber songs to honor his lost son, Boy. Most often...
You're laughing.
Why are you laughing?
I just can't get over his son being called Boy his whole life. Like, I...
Hey, Boy, come here.
Like, I just... It's such a pet name... But then that's just what he went by. I wonder if he introduced himself as Boy.
Hello, it's nice to meet you. My name is Boy.
Exactly.
Most often, guests will hear the song, "Where is my wandering boy tonight?" playing eerily throughout the castle.
That's so sad.
I know. Other strange noises, such as footsteps and doors and windows opening and closing, have also been reported. Now, I took this story from Haunted Hatley Castle by Brenda Robson on Hub Pages, posted in 2022. In her article, she writes this. Royal Roads Military College used the castle as a dormitory and mess hall for cadets and staff officers after it was purchased by the Defense Department in 1941. It was during this time that Laura really made her presence known. Almost as soon as the boys settled in, they started reporting strange events. While studying late at night on the second or third floor, the cadets sometimes felt like they were being wrapped in a mass of freezing cobwebs. An apparition of a small old woman often appeared by their beds. Sometimes, the specter pulled at their blankets as they tried to sleep. Many believed it was Laura Dunsmuir's spirit. A cadet acting as a senior officer had a especially unnerving experience with the female phantom. He woke up early one morning because someone was tugging on his leg. To his horror, he discovered it was Laura's ghost. He tried hard to break free, but she held on tightly. When he finally managed to get away, the woman disappeared. Laura didn't seem to like having the young boys in her home. However, she may have been trying to protect them. With her antics, maybe she was trying to force them out of the school, hoping to save them from a fate like her own son's.
That's crazy. Like, she was just holding on to his leg for dear life.
Yeah, she was just pulling on his leg.
But why didn't she say anything?
She's a ghost.
Yeah, but spirits can talk sometimes.
This is true, but maybe she was trying to talk, and maybe he couldn't hear her.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. And then what, did she just vanish away from his bed, or?
Yeah, then she just disappeared.
Oh.
Yeah. Another story that took place during the years of the castle's debut as a naval training academy was that of Annabelle. This one's a really sad story. The cadets claim to see a young woman walking the halls before disappearing through a window or a door. Occasionally, they would see her crying in one certain room, and then she would float out toward the sea. People have seen this window opening and closing on its own, and many believe that the spirit is of a young parlor maid named Annabelle. She and Laura became super close friends after she had been working at the castle for a while, and when Annabelle wanted to marry, Laura offered to pay for everything. Tragically, during the wedding ceremony, Annabelle's soon-to-be husband left her at the altar. She later learned that he was already married with children. Devastated by this, she jumped to her death from one of the upper windows at Hatley Castle.
Oh my god.
I know. It's really, really sad.
Wait. Oh no. So she was like, oh, I found the love of my life. We're going to get married.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just randomly found out he's already married with kids.
Yep, that's right.
Very similar to John Monroe from...
Yeah.
From our Maggie Vale episode. That's so messed up. And then...
I know.
And then right after she found out, she jumped out of the window.
Right after. She went back to Hatley Castle and then jumped out of the window.
Wow. Okay, so her ghost is seen there?
Yep, Annabelle's ghost is seen there a lot. There's also, in 1937, after Laura's death, this is a bit shorter, but a maid who worked there, she just kept complaining of having strong feelings of being watched when no one was around. And these feelings were so overwhelming that she refused to go into some of the rooms in the castle on her own. Which, like, I actually don't blame her at all, because I also wouldn't go into spooky castle rooms on my own, probably.
Yeah, I also wouldn't do that, because there's too many horror stories of people just going off on their own, and then guess what? They all get murdered.
But at the same time, it actually would kind of be fun to live in a castle.
I think it would be fun to live in a castle, but you have to have people in there with you.
Yes.
Like, living alone in a castle would just be too lonely.
You know that guy on Instagram who brings his cow into his house?
Oh my god, yeah.
Maybe you just bring a cow into your castle.
I would not have a cow in my castle.
Okay, but I saw this morning I saw one of his reels and he turned his cow into a ghost.
That one is so cute.
Yeah, I know. Imagine a cow ghost in your castle, but it's a real cow. It's not a dead cow.
Okay, he can have his own room. The cow room.
Okay, another haunting story. This one got me. And I read it last night to Bristol. I read it out loud, and then I was like, I don't think I should read this story to you. But then I did it anyway. So in 2013, a young woman with her husband and their daughter toured Hatley Castle. They saw nothing strange, but when they got home, they started encountering weird happenings. Around 1 or 2 a.m., a baby's cry woke up the parents.
Oh, no.
They ran to their daughter's room, only to find her sound asleep. They were puzzled, but all was quiet, so they went back to sleep too, which is crazy. I would never go back to sleep after that, but okay, to each their own.
I'm surprised that they didn't take their daughter into their room.
Yeah, but let's not judge any parenting styles here. I mean, I get it. Like, maybe they just couldn't sleep. They need their sleep. They're parents of a young child.
Yeah, that's true.
A little while later, the same thing happened again, and they realized that the sound was coming from the baby monitor, which was kind of tucked away, since their daughter was old enough that they didn't need to rely on it. The young woman verified that the crying was coming from the monitor. She, like, held it in her hands. She's looking at it. She's like, okay, what the heck? So she left it with her husband. She's like, you hold on to this. Let me go check our daughter again. She went to her daughter's bedroom, only to find that she was still sleeping. Back at her bedroom, the noise was still coming from the baby monitor. Confused and now wide awake, she went to unplug it, only to realize that it was already unplugged. She checked the battery compartment, but it too was empty, and her husband were super freaked out. They're staring at the monitor while it's literally crying and flashing lights. So this is what they did. They just ended up taking it downstairs and leaving it in the kitchen and then going back to sleep.
Okay.
Give me this. That is not something that you would do. There is no way in hell that if a baby monitor was going off, not plugged in, no batteries, I am not about to just leave it downstairs in my kitchen and just say, well, don't know what the hell that is. Gotta go to sleep now.
Time to go back to sleep.
I'm not. No, that's insanity. That's crazy behavior.
I know.
I'm like so baffled that they did that. They must be like big Shaniacs. True non-believers.
That's true.
So, okay, so what happens next?
So over the next few days, the woman started dealing with some falling boxes and moved equipment at her work. Eventually, they contacted a psychic who told them that they had attracted the spirit of a nanny that once worked and died at the castle. Could this maybe have been Annabelle? I know she was listed as a parlor maid, but I don't know. Just trying to connect it all, you know?
Maybe. Probably.
Built on the backs of underpaid Chinese workers, Hatley Castle has been transformed over time from a secret gathering place for high society Victoria to a public-funded university where people from all backgrounds gather to work and study. As we get closer to Halloween and the veil thins, take time to remember those who have come before you, and you never know. Maybe they just might make themselves seen. And that is Hatley Castle and the ghosts that reside there.
I mean, I hope that I see something this Halloween. You know, I went on a ghostly walk last night.
Tell me about that.
Montana and I went, and I think it was the same as the one that you went on a couple weeks ago.
With the Pink Pony Club.
With the Pink Pony Club.
Pink Pony Club. I'm gonna keep on dancing at the Pink Pony Club.
Exactly. So, yeah, we went on the ghostly walk last night. It was so much fun. It was amazing, really.
Yeah.
And now,
actually, like, huge shout out to Ghostly Walks.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And now I really want to go see a play at McPherson.
I would go with you. There's some really good, spooky, fun things happening around the city at this time of year.
That's true. However, I was thinking of going, I think it's starting soon. I don't remember the date, but they're going to be doing a Christmas carol kind of thing.
Wait, no. No, 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 no. It's way too soon for Christmas carols. No.
Well, starting in November, it's the holiday season.
Okay, but November is in like a week from now.
Yeah, exactly.
Blink, blink.
Okay. Anyway. Also, I know that they do ghostly Christmas walks.
Okay, that's a vibe. Just bring the spooks all the way through the next season. Yep.
So, Montana and I are going to go do that in a couple weeks, if you wanted to join us as well.
Yeah, I would love that.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for your story.
Yeah, thanks for listening to my story. It's 10:45. How are you feeling? Do you feel like you want to do yours?
It's up to you. What do you think? I can do mine. It's not too long.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sarah, tell us your story.
Okay. So, for my story, I'm kind of going back to our first episode.
I might need you a bit louder.
I'm going back to our first episode.
Good.
About Ross Bay Cemetery.
Okay. Whoa. 2-month throwback.
Yes. If you haven't listened to it, go listen to it now. It's called Sir, This is a Cemetery. And I love the name of it.
Me too.
So I decided, you know, when I was doing my research for that episode, I found another ghost that haunts St. Andrew's Cathedral. And if you recall from that episode, I did say I would talk about him at a later date.
Yes.
And that date is today.
Yay! I'm so excited.
So I'm going to be talking about the skull-faced ghost.
Okay. Almost burped.
Also known as Charles John Sagers. He was a bishop.
Okay. That's all I have to say. Okay.
So, I'm going to call him Sagers throughout the story, just because he was a bishop and bishops go by their last names a lot.
Bishop Sagers.
Oh. Yeah.
That's giving me, like, Bishop Saggy vibes.
What's that from?
I just made it up.
Oh, she just made it up. Okay.
Bishop Saggy. So, hey, what up, Bishop Saggy? What up, Bishop Saggy?
So, Charles John Sagers was born in Ghent, Belgium, in December of 1839. He attended a college that was founded to provide America with English-speaking clergymen. Don't really know why.
Okay, but doesn't America already speak English?
Yeah, so that's why I'm confused.
What was the year?
Oh, it's 1839. So that kind of makes sense if you think of, like bishops are often in Italy.
True. Yes.
So that's what I think.
Okay.
If we fast forward, he became an ordained priest in May of 1863 and soon left to begin missionary work in Victoria after responding to an appeal for the colony of Vancouver Island.
Ew.
Yeah.
Sorry. Ew. Hot take. Ew.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
In 1871, he was appointed as a... Oh, I don't know how to say this word, actually. Diocesan. That's it. Diocesan?
Yeah, let's go with it.
Okay. He was a Diocesan administrator.
like a Dyson vacuum. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry.
Which governs the diocese.
Okay.
Which is a group of churches overseen by a bishop. And in 1873, he was appointed Bishop of Vancouver Island. So now he would be considered Bishop of Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's important to note that a missionary is a member of a religious group that is sent to spread their faith to other people. During this time, we can assume that Sagers and other Catholic missionaries were tasked with spreading their religion to the indigenous nations within Canada and America. As Jamie mentioned in her story, the 1800s was a huge time of colonization within the west of Canada. In what is now known as Victoria, the Hudson's Bay Company wanted to establish a trading fort on Vancouver Island before Spanish settlers. Fort Victoria was constructed on Lekwungen territory, where the inner harbor is, and by the 1840s, the Lekwungen peoples established themselves within the settlers' trading, even maintaining some control over trading efforts, since the materials were taken from their land.
Mm-hmm.
During the 1850s, then appointed so-called governor of the colony of Victoria, James Douglas, began establishing treaties with the Lekwungen peoples. The famous Douglas Treaties were orally negotiated, and the agreed terms were that the Lekwungen peoples would allow settlement in exchange for material goods from the settlers. They were promised that the signatories and their descendants would maintain their settlements and hunting rights on unoccupied land.
Mm-hmm.
However, as we know now, the treaties were written out after the Lekwungen peoples had signed a blank piece of paper.
Yep, it's all complete bullshit. And
all of the grounds that the university stands on were part of the traditional territories, like the hunting territories that were supposed to be kept for the Lekwungen peoples.
Right. So this allowed Douglas to write that the indigenous nations in and around Fort Victoria sold their land to the British Crown, which we know is one of the biggest lies in forever.
That's so fucked up. Pardon my French.
I know. This is only a snippet of colonization within Lekwungen history and is a crucial part of Victoria's history, but it's vital when speaking about religion and colonization in Canada. And it's especially vital for my story today because we're talking about a bishop.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
So, after being anointed Archbishop of Oregon City in 1880 and visiting Rome in 1883, Sagers petitioned Pope Leo XIII to be... Roman numerals are hard.
Yes, I agree.
To be reassigned to Vancouver Island to continue his missionary work, and it was granted. In November of 1886, that is. So many 1800s.
Yeah. Oh, the 1800s of it all.
Exactly. Sagers decided to go on a missionary trip to Nulato. I'm really sorry for that pronunciation.
Like, where? Where?
Like, in the Yukon.
Okay.
I'm kind of confused, though, because it says Yukon, but then other articles said Alaska, so I'm not sure at this point if Alaska was still part of Canada or not.
I also don't know my history well enough. Sorry.
Yeah, so anyway.
Also, I just keep looking over at the snack shack, and I'm, like, so hungry.
When we're finished with our episode, we're going to grab a little snack at the snack shack.
Yeah.
So he goes to remote areas of Yukon and Alaska to, quote, spreading the divine savior's gospel, unquote.
Awesome.
Yay. Most likely to colonize indigenous peoples and nations within the north before the Protestants came along to do it themselves.
What? I didn't actually know that that was part of it, that they just wanted to do it first, actually.
Yeah, so because he was Catholic, mm-hmm. he wanted to get there before the Protestants.
Okay.
Yeah, he just... Yeah, he wanted to colonize first.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Even though he had actually been to this area before, so he was already known in that area, and people really liked him there.
I'm suspicious of that.
Yeah, Along this trip were two other Jesuit priests, Tosi and Robot.
Row your boat.
Gently down the stream. A French laborer and an assistant, Francis Fuller. It wasn't long into the trip when Fuller began to display signs of what we would now likely describe as paranoid...
Scurvy.
Not scurvy.
Oh. I thought it was scurvy.
Not scurvy.
Okay, sorry.
Paranoid personality disorder.
Oh.
Or paranoid schizophrenia.
Oh, okay.
Characterized by distrust and suspicion of others, auditory and or visual hallucinations, and disorganized thinking and behavior.
Okay, so not scurvy.
Not scurvy at all, not even close.
Okay, sorry.
That's okay. Fuller would talk to people who weren't there and heard voices saying that the men he was traveling with were part of a conspiracy to kill him.
So are they on a boat right now?
So they took a boat up to Alaska / the Yukon area, and then... they used sleds to get to where they wanted to go.
Okay.
Yeah. At some point, the French laborer traveling with them is said to have disappeared. The priests believe he had become tired of Fuller's continual mental decline, but it was speculated in later years that he was actually Fuller's first victim.
I was going to say, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but it's not, like, we don't know. We just don't know.
Okay, but we can make a pretty safe assumption, you know?
Yeah, he just disappeared, so Fuller might have killed him.
Yeah, NBD.
No big deal. It said that Sagehurst thought he could help or control Fuller. The two Jesuit priests, however, grew tired of Fuller, so Sagehurst suggested that they split ways. Fuller was actually on this expedition via Father Tosi, one of the priests from the beginning of the journey. Tosi met Fuller on a mission in 1882, where Fuller was given employment on a farm and helped with general chores.
Okay.
In March of 1886, he was in Spokane Falls working as a watchmaker when he learned of Sager's trek to the Yukon and applied to accompany him as a laborer and guide.
Okie dokie.
So,
I'm with you.
Okay. So, Sagehurst and Fuller carried on with three indigenous guides that were with them to traverse the remote land, while Tosi and Ribot, oh, it's probably Ribot.
I think it's robot.
That might be robot.
I think it's row, row, row your boat.
So, Tosi and Ribot.
Rowboat.
Row your boat. were to spend the winter by the Yukon River. So, bye to them. After days of moving towards Nulato, Sagehurst is said to have consulted with the indigenous guides on where they should stop for a rest. Apparently, Fuller didn't like this and was very racist and stated that Sagehurst, quote, ought to ask his advice and not that of the guides, unquote. But he did not use the word guides.
What the actual beep is going on? Why does this always happen?
Racism.
True.
Because they're white people and they think they're better than everyone else.
Yeah, and also, like, how many times has it happened where settlers are trying to, like, they're essentially using indigenous guides and the indigenous people are being really helpful and kind mm-hmm. and trying to protect them from dying.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, ah, you guys are wrong. You wouldn't know, even though you've been here for millennia. And then
mm-hmm.
the indigenous people are like, okay, good luck, I guess. And then they die. The settlers die. Honestly, survival of the fittest.
Yeah. So Fuller was horrible. Sagehurst, however, responded by saying that they should rely on the indigenous guides and that he wished to follow them. So good on him for doing that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. This did not sit well with Fuller, who tried to start a row between the guides and Sagehurst, but no one was having his bullshit. Pardon my French.
A row?
A fight.
Another rowboat?
Exactly. I can't. They set up camp for the night and went to sleep. In the early morning hours of November 28th, 1886, Fuller shot Sagehurst in the chest while he was gathering some of his gear. So Sagehurst died instantly, having been shot through the heart.
Shot through the heart.
And you're too late.
You to can. Blame.
Oh.
You're to blame.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got the words wrong.
That's okay.
Do you need help finding your spot?
I'm so sorry. I lost my spot.
Okay, Karen.
Okay. I saw in another resource, however, that this is actually how the story went. Fuller got up and sat by the dying fire in their hut in the morning of November 28th. He was sitting silently looking at the sleeping Sagehurst and just, I guess, had a rifle under his coat. This is according to the guides. He was sitting silently looking... Oh, I said that.
Get it together.
Oh, my goodness.
Get it together, sister. Come on.
It said that Fuller suddenly stood up, aroused the sleeping Sagehurst, and pointed the rifle square in his face and shot him in the left eye with the bullet leaving the back of his neck.
Well, at least he aroused him first.
Yeah, he was like, hey, bitch, get up.
No, I mean he aroused
him. Oh my god.
At least he had a little fun before he killed him.
Oh my god.
Oh no. I'm lost it again.
Okay, do you need help? Do you need some help finding your place in your story?
No, I got it. It said that... No, I'm not even down there. It said that Fuller was in a full psychotic state during this time, even shaking hands with one of the indigenous guides, saying, quote, that man needed to be killed, unquote. He was still under the impression that Sagers was part of a conspiracy to kill him.
Okay.
Yeah. The guides grabbed Fuller and took his rifle, wrapped up Sager's body, and then left to get help with Fuller in tow. And he went willingly. Okay. So I assume that with Sager's dead, Fuller's psychological state would have resolved at some capacity, and that he would willingly go with the indigenous guides to find help.
Sorry, who would?
Fuller.
Okay. Fuller snapped out of it, and then he's like, uh-oh, and then he went with the indigenous guides to find help.
He didn't say, uh-oh, but he shook their hands and was just like, oh, thank God that's over. That guy needed to be killed.
Okay.
So I think that with Sager's dead, Fuller was like, great, I'll go with you to get help because I did kill that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were able to reach a village that day, but they didn't really know what to do with Fuller. So they suggested that he spend the winter in another village because he frightened two local indigenous women, obviously.
Yeah, get him out of that village, honestly.
Yeah, because he was like, oh, I did kill someone. He just didn't really care.
So wild. I mean, of course we understand that these things happen. But it's really hard to, like, wrap your head around it.
Yeah, exactly. So he gave himself up, and a preliminary trial was actually conducted in Sitka, Alaska. During this time, Fuller would change his story of the murder multiple times.
Right. I mean, it makes sense. He's not even in his right mind to begin with. So, like, how... He's not... Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't until the spring of 1887 that the other priests from the beginning of the story learned of Sager's death, and Sager's body was recovered sometime in the spring or summer of 1887. By the time Sager's body was recovered, his face had been partially eaten by mice and other small fowl in the woods.
Oh my god, that's really messed up.
Well, the guys just had to leave him there.
Yeah. Oh, no.
And then he was left there from winter to, like, spring.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He was buried in the cemetery at St. Michael in Alaska in July of 87. In 1888, Sager's body was exhumed and sent to Victoria, where he was buried in the crypt of St. Andrew's.
Oh man, we gotta go there and do like an Estes session, a spirit box session.
I don't think they would like that very much.
Who? No, not inside. I mean just outside.
Oh.
Wait. Who wouldn't like it? The ghosts?
No, the people who go there for church.
Ah, well, you know, you win some, you lose some. Oh, sometimes you find two weirdos doing a spirit box session at your church.
If anyone ever sees two people outside of St. Andrew's just standing there with headphones on and a little box in between them, that's us doing a spirit box session.
Yeah.
So catch us there.
And you're welcome to join us.
Oh, yeah, that would be so fun. So Sagers was buried in an ebony casket with silver mountings. Very fancy for the time.
Well, he was, like, a bishop, right?
Yeah, he was the bishop of Victoria. And an archbishop. Mm. I don't really know what the difference is, I'm sorry. His burial in the crypt was in November of 1888 and was given a hero's welcome by the city of Victoria, even with the Navy participating in the ceremony.
Whoa.
Yeah, which I don't even know why they were there.
He was really well known, huh?
Yeah, the people, I will say the white people really liked him. I don't know about the indigenous people.
Yeah.
Rumors had already spread that Sagers was shot in the head, so his casket was actually opened in private in St. Andrews. His cause of death was confirmed to be from a bullet, but since his body was already in a state of decay and his face had been eaten by mice, these rumors really couldn't be fully disputed. So we're unsure if he was shot in the head or in the chest.
Okay. Wait. They did an autopsy, right?
Oh, I don't know.
Didn't you say that they literally pulled him out so that they could see if they got shot in the head or not?
They opened his casket.
And?
Well, his body was so decayed already. We're in November of 1888.
Okay, so they didn't do a real autopsy. They were just trying to look at his head.
This is what I'm getting at.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Oh, my God.
But if he was shot through the eye, he wouldn't have any eyes left. He didn't have any eyes left by the time they opened the coffin here in Victoria.
Okay, the thing is, using, like, real forensics, you would totally be able to know if a bullet hole is in your skull.
But it came... But, so, that article said that it came out the back of his neck.
I don't know. I feel like let's ask Paul Holes. He would know.
Oh, I would love to talk to Paul Holes.
Me too. Get him on the podcast. Get him on the show.
Okay, we'll get in touch with his people. So now we'll move on to Fuller's trial. The jury was locked between deciding whether he should be hanged for first-degree murder or if he wasn't guilty due to reasons of insanity.
Yeah.
Yeah. The jury decided to convict Fuller of manslaughter, sentence him to 10 years of hard labor, and was fined $1,000. Do you want to guess how much that is today?
I'm going to guess
don't look at my page.
$1,000 in 1800s money is probably $20,000 in today's money.
Okay, no.
$10,000.
No.
$15,000.
No.
$30,000.
It's three. Apparently it's just over what? $3,000. I guess $1,000 in 1888 is just over $3,000.
Sure.
I don't know. I think that's a lie. I think the internet fooled me.
Actually, it kind of checks out. I think it's... Well, I thought it was like a 30 times buying power, not a 3 times buying power.
I have no idea. Anyway, the community was outraged. They saw Fuller as either being guilty or not guilty, since he admitted numerous times to killing Sagers on numerous occasions.
Yeah.
But his reasons for killing Bishop Sagers changed over and over again. But he continually admitted to killing him, so people wanted him hanged.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. But, I mean, I don't think that we should do that. I don't really agree with the death penalty at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I do understand why the community was upset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess they wanted an eye for an eye.
Yeah.
Get it? He was maybe shot in the eye.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. There has to be some humor in here.
We definitely have a lot of gallows humor.
Yes. Which is perfect for today's market.
That's right.
So, now we'll move on to Bishop Sager's ghost.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now known as one of Vancouver Island's most terrifying ghosts to witness, he appears in full priest robes, likely what he was buried in.
Right.
He is said to glide across.
Gliding across the flame.
He is said to glide across the floor of St. Andrew's Cathedral from out of the shadows, sometimes standing still and staring at visitors from the darkness.
That's really scary.
Yeah, I know. But as your eyes begin to take in the darkness, you begin to see that the bishop has no face or flesh.
Ooh.
He's just bones in a set of robes.
Spooky. That's spooky. Mm-hmm. Ooky. Mm-hmm.
Known as the skull-faced ghost, some people believe that he could have some unfinished business, and that's why perhaps his spirit hasn't fully moved on. It was during the expansion of the cathedral in 1890, going back to our first episode,
mm-hmm.
that strange occurrences began. Workers would claim that their tools were being moved or just vanished. Some felt they were being touched when no one else was around. And cold winds would gust through the worksite even on warm days.
That's really spooky. As someone who has worked in trades before, it is so spooky when you're just trying to do your fucking job and you're being haunted by a ghost.
Wait, have you been haunted by a ghost at a job site?
No, but I have worked like really late at job sites before and then just been so scared the entire time that I'm like constantly looking behind me. I know that Dad has felt that way too, actually.
I think that Dad, he's not here in person, but he will be listening to this recording later on. He needs to send us some of his ghost stories.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, great. We'll get that in the works.
Close to you, keep the microphone
close to you.
I'm trying.
This one.
I'm looking at my notes. Oh, boy. Maybe Sager's spirit has moved on and something more dark attached himself to Sager before he died. Itself. Sorry, I'll say that again.
Say it again.
Maybe something more dark attached itself to Sager before he died, leaving behind the imprint of something other than himself, something that loves to mess with people. Depending on what you believe, it is possible that Fuller had a demonic attachment that plagued his mind, and when he killed Sager, it took over Sager's spirit. Or maybe moving Sager's body multiple times disturbed his spirit, and his ghost roams St. Andrews because he cannot fully rest.
That's spooky. I didn't even think about how it would maybe be a demonic possession.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I actually read this article titled Life After Death, The Difference Between Spirits and Ghosts by Brandy Fleck, where she says that ghosts are impressions in space and time, where spirits can interact with the physical environment if they choose to do so. Additionally, Brandy notes that ghosts are often unaware that they are ghosts, whereas spirits are aware and active. In this sense, ghosts are stuck, but spirits are free.
That's so interesting. I never thought about it that way, but that makes a lot of sense.
She goes on to say that, quote, humans are manifestations of spiritual energy, while ghosts are manifestations of human energy, end quote.
So, wait, humans are manifestations of spiritual energy, or do you mean spirits are manifestations of human energy?
No, humans are manifestations of spiritual energy.
Oh, so we're all just fake?
No.
Okay, it's twisting my mind a little
okay.
bit.
Okay, well, it's supposed to make you think. Another article titled Explaining the Difference Between Ghosts and Spirits and Other Paranormal Jargon, written by Rick Hinton, continues that ghosts are a, quote, playback, end quote, or something that existed before, where spirits are in real time.
That makes sense. Ghosts are kind of like in a loop, but spirits are just like floating around, doing their thing.
Yeah, exactly. From these articles, we can assume that what people now see as the skull-faced ghost of Bishop Sager's is actually a spirit, since his apparition doesn't play in a loop, but it stares at people and moves around the cathedral on its own accord.
Right.
So, whatever you believe, The Murder and Ghost of Bishop Saggers is a chilling tale from Victoria's past.
Ooh, I love that.
Thank you.
That was great. Okay. So we just want to provide a couple of things here for you, because some of those stories involved mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are dealing with anything mental health related, or if you're experiencing a mental health crisis, you can always call the phone number 310-6789, and that is for the Victim Link BC and the Crisis Center BC. So thank you, everybody, for joining us
yes.
today as you ventured through the market.
Yes.
We hope you found some spooky, ooky items. Everything is looking so beautiful out there. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like people are having a great time. And we're also going to have a little bit of a look around. And also catch us here tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a booth set up, and we would love for people to come and tell us their own ghost stories, and hopefully we can make a podcast episode about other people's stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely on the docket for mm-hmm. us. So thank you. If you are interested in listening to more of our blabbing, you can find us at Ghoul Society wherever you get your podcasts. You can also email us with any questions or comments at ghoulsocietypod@gmail.com and throw us a follow on Instagram at ghoulsocietypod. Another quick big shout out, special thank you to Kirsten
yes.
and all of those who helped to make the Halloween YYJ market happen. And again, we're so grateful to have been a part of this awesome event. Thank you.
Bye.